Coming up on Golf Today, a visit with DP World Tour executive Guy Kinnings. We'll take a look at the Ryder Cup from a European perspective and get you ready for the duel at Marco Simone in 2 weeks' time. The Solheim Cup is next week, so a good time to catch up with Megan Kang from Team USA. She got her first LPGA win last month and is carrying great form into Spain. And we'll give equal time to Team Europe and one of its young stars from Sweden, Maya Stark. Come on down. You are the next contestant on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Just about 2 weeks away from the 44th Ryder Cup at Marco Simone Golf and Country Club as the U.S. looks to win on foreign soil for the first time since 1993, the year Michael Jordan dusted off the first of two three-peats in the NBA. This is Golf Today. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch, Golf Week Magazine. I tell you what, we're getting close. You know, all the talk that we've had for nearly 2 years is coming to a head. And I tell you what, this U.S. buddy system is about to be put to the test.
Yeah, as we all know from past experience, Damon, that the autopsies on Ryder Cups can be pretty brutal, particularly on the U.S. team. The Europeans always seem to emerge a little bit unscathed from those kind of postmortems if they have a losing one, as they did 2 years ago. But, you know, victory silences all criticism. And if no one's going to care how a team came together, if that team comes home with a trophy, that's the reality of what they're dealing with.
Absolutely.
Right here.
We got some Ryder Cuppers playing this week. The whole European team is playing at Wentworth, and a couple of American Ryder Cuppers are out in the Napa Valley in Justin Thomas and Max Homa. We'll hear from them a little bit later on Golf Today.
Everyone's looking for form somewhere. As Damon mentioned, just a couple of weeks until that Ryder Cup. Let's flash back to the last one that was held in Europe. That was in 2018 at Le Golf National in Paris. And the European squad regained the cup with a 17.5-10.5 victory over the United States. They lost one since then, though, of course, in Whistling Straits. But the European record at home is unbeaten for 30 years. We're pleased to be joined now by Guy Kinnings, who is a man with many titles, one of which is Deputy CEO of the Ryder Cup. Guy, thanks for joining us. We know how important the Ryder Cup is to fans and spectators. Put this in a commercial sense for us. How important is the Ryder Cup to the business of the DP World Tour?
I mean, the Ryder Cup is definitely important to the business. And each home Ryder Cup, they come around every 4 years, is certainly essential to what we do. We like to think that the tour itself now has grown in sufficient strength that we are pretty robust through the other years. There's been significant revenue growth. We just announced a sort of pretty strong 2024 schedule. But there's no doubt that the Ryder Cup, in a commercial sense, is very important for us. I think it's probably more important in other ways as well. It just sets a tone for what sort of the DP World Tour, what the European Tour in the past has been. As you know, it's the event when non-golf fans get drawn in. We're incredibly lucky to have it as an asset in the game. It excites like nothing else. It sort of gets that intercontinental. It gets that sort of passion that you have from the two teams, and you see players behave like they wouldn't do otherwise. They love to get on it. They get more excited than they perhaps would do regular tournaments. So I think it's important for us as a tour. It's incredibly important for the game. We're very lucky to have it.
Well, Guy, how would you describe the tone and tenor of the Ryder Cup modern day compared to 91 or 99 when things maybe got a little too feisty in some people's minds?
Yeah, it's very interesting to see because there's no less competition. You know, we've had both teams in Rome in the last few days. You can see the excitement amongst those teams. We know that when they go out, play against each other in Rome in a couple of weeks' time, so the competition and the intensity will be every bit as much as it's ever been. But I guess you've got to remember, these guys do play. Most of them play together week in, week out on the PGA Tour. They're friends. They park that friendship when it comes to the intensity of the matches. But again, there's something about the Ryder Cup, which, and I think we have to remember, you know, there's a sense in which they play for each other. They play for the teams, they play for their continents, but they also play in the right way. And I know it was a long time ago, but you know, you could probably only have in golf or in the Ryder Cup the concession the Jack and Tony Jacklin moment, which kind of embodies all the stuff that's right in the game. And I think the tournament does that. So I have no doubt that there'll be every bit as much of intensity. But I also think that the game will be played in the right way. It's always a reminder of what are the best things in the game.
A lot of the qualification criteria has been adjusted over the years to comprise the European team guide to accommodate people who play primarily on the PGA Tour in the United States without undermining those who compete primarily in Europe. With more and more people competing on the PGA Tour, is there any sense you have that the qualification criteria might be further adjusted in the near future?
If you look at where we are in terms of how the qualification has worked and the interest levels that we've had this time around, you know, it's always possible that you can adjust things. We aim to improve the event in every way, in every aspect, event on event, cycle on cycle. And again, we'll obviously look at how you make sure that the qualification is fair to make sure that you get, you know, we want the best of the 24 of the greatest players in the world from each continent coming and playing against each other. But I think if you look at what's evolved over the last couple of weeks and the interest levels there have been, and Luke's been the guy on the front line having to deal with this, working with his vice captains, I would say that the mixture that's been ended up with of the experienced, truly global players, with some players who've emerged and emerged primarily just on DP World Tour events in the last few weeks, probably means we feel that the systems work really well this time, and we'll see what when we see how the matches play out in the end. But overall, it's again something which evolves with time, but generally we've been very happy with how it's worked out this time.
Guy, you mentioned the captain, Luke Donald. What are his best attributes so far that you've seen as captain?
Well, I'm slightly biased. I put for his sins, poor old Luke had to have me as manager many years ago. And to see him achieve everything that he's done is fantastic. In a way, Luke has always delivered, but has always been in an understated way. As I once said, you know, he when he speaks, it's well worth listening. And he has always the reason that the teams and the players have embraced him so much as they have is his Ryder Cup record is exceptional. His record in match play golf, his Walker Cup record was exceptional. It has the respect of the players. He is thorough. He's thoughtful. He works things through. He's been tireless in the time that he's worked with us. He has really worked. He has exhausted himself in making sure he's across all of the key aspects of everything that needs to be done to give them the best chance of success. But I would say what he's done is he's found a great way of making sure that he has the respect and he's able to work with those leading fantastic global players we've got, but also he's worked well to understand and get to know all of the players in contention, all of the youngsters. I was with him only an hour ago walking along the range, and he had time for everyone along the range. He was talking to the players in his team, the players that weren't in his team, with the caddies, support staff and everyone. And he is, as I said, he's thorough. He will leave no stone unturned. We don't know what the result will be, but it will be through no lack of effort on his part when it gets to those final few holes on Sunday.
One of the other things we don't know, Guy, is the possibility of protests, which we've seen at pretty much every major sporting event this summer, most recently at the US Open Tennis Championship last week when a climate change protester glued himself to the stadium. Are you anticipating or do you have any concern about any similar protests at Marco Simone?
You're right. I mean, there's no self-respecting, you know, sort of sporting event this summer hasn't had some sort of protest. And as we've seen, you know, you have to almost expect that now. We obviously want to do everything we can to make sure that nothing happens that would impact the enjoyment of, you know, the hundreds of thousands of fans we expect there and everyone tuning in. And as you'll also be aware, a golf course is a big place and it's a big bit of land and it's difficult to protect completely in every way. We are taking every measures. We're working very closely with the authorities in Italy to monitor those that will be arriving as guests and others around there. We will, as we have with everything around a major sporting event, and the Ryder Cup is a very major sporting event. It's, you know, one of the biggest in sports, certainly one of the biggest in golf. We will try and cover every contingency we can, be planned for that. And, you know, kind of as much as you can expect the unexpected And it's not so much, it's almost impossible to completely deter these things. It's just how you react to it. So we will scenario plan. The team have been working on it for months, frankly years, to try and make sure that we do everything as well as we can. And we'll see what happens and cross our fingers and hope for the best in terms of making sure that nothing happens that won't stop people enjoying what is an amazing sporting event.
Guy, turning our attention to this week's BMW PGA, Luke Donald won it twice back when it was in May. How would you describe this event in the fall, in September, and how it fits with the DP World Tour schedule?
I mean, you've seen what we announced for the 24th schedule. It's been really well received. You know, we focused on the five regional swings around the world. You then come to the events which are post FedEx, and those events that are there will benefit certainly from the fact that post FedEx, more of the international players can come and play. And the, you know, the BMW PGA Championship has always been a flagship event for us. It's one we're incredibly proud of. It was a big change to move it into September. It's worked incredibly well. We've been lucky that the weather's been great. We've got a wonderful field. The course is in brilliant condition, and I think everyone looks forward to that. And we get great crowds. It's almost at the end of that kind of London summer season. And everyone knows all the events that go on, the sporting events. And this one almost bookends at the end, and we're expecting great crowds, wonderful field, pre-Ryder Cup excitement, international players. It's a bit of a festival of golf. We've got musical entertainment that's been going on. We're in the middle of a pro-am today. I saw Gareth Bale earlier, who apparently had 7 birdies in the pro-am. We've got a lot of England cricketers there, and others. So it's a wonderful event for the fans, hugely popular with them, and generally throws, as you say, throws up some pretty good winners.
One of your other titles that I mentioned earlier, Guy, Chief Commercial Officer of the DP World Tour, you're part of the framework agreement between the PGA Tour and the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia. So I'll ask a question that I'm not actually expecting to get an answer to, is where do those talks currently stand? And can you shed any light on what the potential impact will be on what the DP World Tour looks like in the years to come?
Yeah, well, as you predicted, of course, I'll probably give you an inadequate answer. The truth is, all I know is that discussions are going on and are very productive. I think there was a sense in which I think probably needed to get through the FedEx, get through Ryder Cup. I think those conversations and discussions will intensify. From what I understand, I'm not there in the room for all of them. And the truth is that I know there's a strong intent from both sides to try and make sure that there's a huge opportunity for the game here. And I would imagine there'll be a lot of intensive work done in October, November, December to make sure that an agreement that works for the best for the game and for everyone involved gets finished off.
Guy, I know it's a busy time. It's a fun time as well. Thanks for joining us. We'll speak to you soon.
Thank you. Thanks, Simon. Thanks, Simon.
And we have some news today from our Rex Hoggart. Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut intensified his scrutiny of Saudi Arabia's public investment fund today by issuing a subpoena to one of the fund's U.S. subsidiaries for documents related to PIF's takeover of American Golf and other investments throughout the United States. The subpoena seeks documents from USSA International LLC related to the PIF's framework agreement with the PGA Tour and the fund's other investments throughout the United States. Rex Hoggart will join us later in the show with more.
Let's head back inside the ropes, Damon. Before the Ryder Cup, we have the Solheim Cup. That battle gets underway next week in Spain. And one of the American team joins us next, Megan Kang, coming up to the break.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
We're back on Golf Today. The countdown is on for the Solheim Cup, will be contested at Finca Cortesin in Andalusia, Spain. The European team won the biennial competition in 2021. The United States leads the overall series 10-7. And here's a look at the U.S. squad, captained by two-time major champion Stacey Lewis, led by some major winners, some former world number ones. Alison Corpeau is also a major winner this year. And of course, the young standout that's getting everyone's attention, Rose Zhang.
And this team is making the rounds, including an appearance on the Today Show this morning on NBC. This from Nelly Korda's social media handle, signing the Today Rainbow. There's Nelly and Lilia Vu, Captain Stacey Lewis as well. This is reserved for champions, you know, this type of treatment, and it's great to see Team USA out there at 30 Rock today. And speaking of Meghan King, one of the members of the team, 25 years of age, making her third Solheim Cup appearance. Recent winner on the LPGA, broke through in late August for her first career LPGA win at the CPKC Women's Open. And it was well worth the wait. She beat Jin Young Ko in a playoff. Been on the LPGA Tour since 2016. First player from Hmong and Laotian descent on the LPGA Tour, and there defeated Jin Young Ko in that playoff. Member of the Solheim Cup team now three times, she can say, and currently ranked number 14 in the world. And great to have Meghan with us on this Wednesday. Congrats on all the wonderful things happening to you. I want to know, after that win, how did you handle all the phone calls and text messages? Because I read that you got back to everybody and said thank you.
You know, it's a huge feeling of relief to get that first win, but it was amazing. And thankfully, everyone was patient enough to wait for me to get back to them. I think it took me nearly a week to get back to everyone. And I wanted to make it a point to get to them all for reaching out and all the congratulations and the celebrations.
In addition to the victory, Meghan, you've also been top 10 in three major championships this year. Have you reset your goals during the course of this season when you started to accomplish benchmarks that you'd set out? Do you have a different set of goals for the second half of the year?
No. So each year at the end of the season, I kind of make a list of top five goals that I would love to accomplish throughout the year. Obviously, number one was to get that first win, and, you know, very happy that I did. I had the other goal of possibly winning my first major, but like one and two, obviously major first win. And then number three was actually my goal was to get top 10 in all five majors. But, you know, I'll take three out of five, and I think it's a pretty good year so far. And then obviously going to evaluate and see what we can do next year.
Meghan, on that point, pro golfers, pro tennis players, you guys have it tough. You don't win a lot. You know, one person wins and 100-something or 60-something, you know, walk home and try to keep their head held high. What are other ways you measure success outside of victory?
Just personal growth. For me, I knew that I really wanted to lower my putting stats. I wanted to get, like, less average putts out there. You know, putting is one of the hardest things to do in golf. It's a smallest swing, but for some reason, everyone has like the hardest time making putts. And I always joke, you know, drive for show, putt for dough. It's a saying we all know if you're a golfer. And so just kind of little goals in myself, like making my swing a little more compact, making it more efficient with less effort, and, you know, just being the best I can, whether or not I come out on top, because golf is so tough. You never know who's going to win, and it's just kind of what you have to do and take that mindset and go, if I can do this as a player myself, then it's going to be good for the years to come.
Another thing that's tough is being on the first tee at something like the Solheim Cup. We've heard it from generations of players, Meghan, how difficult, how nerve-wracking it is to stand there. Was it easier for you the second time versus the first time, and are you expecting it to be easier again next week?
Honestly, my first Solheim was in Glen Eagles, so totally different atmosphere going from European soil to U.S. soil. And, you know, I think it's just a feeling you never get used to. I think there's so much adrenaline, there's so much excitement, and it's just something that I look forward to every 2 years that hopefully I get to be a part of.
Meghan, a lot of Golf Channel viewers learned your story a few years ago when Randall Mell wrote a beautiful piece on golfchannel.com about your parents and their immigrant journey into this country from Laos. How have they been able to share this journey with you, especially with your first win?
It's been huge. Funny enough, I've been pretty busy since I got home, so we haven't had a proper celebration. But, you know, my dad gave me like a big hug and a kiss. I think he almost started crying when we went out to dinner, but it's been a huge accomplishment for not only like myself, but my family and our journey. My dad being self-taught, my mom being a kindergarten teacher, and still is. It's been huge for us, and we truly can say we're living the American dream.
That's the team at home, Meghan. When you're competing in the team on the road in an individual sport, it can be kind of tough. I mean, you sat out three sessions, the first three sessions last time around, eventually came through in the singles and got a victory there. Is that a frustrating part of team play that doesn't really get focused on enough is that you are kind of hostage to the decisions that are ultimately made by others in the best interests of the team.
Honestly, I think when you get to Solheim and you get to that team atmosphere, like, you are perfectly fine doing whatever the captain says, because at the end of the day, like, we want what's best for the team. And that's when egos kind of have to go out the door. Like, it's, hey, clearly something's working. Like, let's go in that direction. And I think no one's going to get offended, because, you know, at the end of the day, we're there as a team, and we're going to do what's best for the team. And if that means I have to sit out that and we end up winning, like, that's perfectly fine with me.
What about from a personality standpoint? Are you bringing the levity and the fun? Are you bringing the fire? What's your role maybe outside the ropes?
You know, I'm there to be my teammates' biggest cheerleaders, whether or not I'm playing or I'm watching outside the ropes. I'm there, and if you need to pick me up, I'm going to be right there to try and get you back into the zone. And again, I think each player out there, whether it's me, whether it's another teammate out there watching, you know, we're going to have each other's backs. And I think that's something great about Solheim, is that we don't get to play in a team environment. And when we do, we're all going to give it our best and be each other's cheerleaders.
Well, Megan, it's been so fun following your success and your climb in this game. Congratulations and best of luck next week in Spain.
Thank you so much.
Again, let's take another look at the U.S. team, who will look to reclaim the cup next week in Spain. Finca Cortesín for captain Stacey Lewis. And our own Paige McKenzie will be part of the coverage team from Spain. She joins us now. Paige, a lot of new faces on this U.S. side. What do you make of any potential pairings for this team?
You know, I think that's one of the challenges for Stacey Lewis and the United States captains, is figuring out how do you pair five rookies. And she's talked about it many times, that they're not really rookies because they're all very accomplished players. And that is true. But over time, you get a chance to see what players pair well with each other. And I think that goes with the experience of playing in the Solheim Cup. I was talking to Brittany Lang on Monday of this week, and she talked about her own experience, that she felt so comfortable whenever she was paired with Brittany Lincecombe. She felt like that brought out the best in both of them, just based on that comfort on the golf course. You could look at Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele, it echoes a lot of the sentiment that they have. So USA cannot lean a lot on that type of experience within the Solheim Cup environment, but they can lean on perhaps some amateur team competitions. Because we do have, or we're going to see, five rookies on this team, they have played in some great amateur events. That's Lilia Vu that partnered with Jennifer Kupcho in the 2018 Curtis Kepp, which ultimately the United States was victorious in that matchup. And you also have to consider, even some of the players that we've seen before, they don't have a lot of winning experience. However, some of the rookies like Rose Zhang and Allison Corpus, who teamed up in 2021 on the Curtis Cup, they also were victorious. And a good portion of the 2015 Junior Solheim Cup is gonna make another appearance. Yes, that is Megan Kang. In Junior Solheim Cup gear. She was paired alongside Andrea Lee, Angel Yin, Nelly Korda on this 2015 Junior Solheim Cup team. So when you look at the United States, I think they've got a couple challenges. Number one, figuring out what feels good with the partnerships. Stacey Lewis is going to have all the analytics to tell you what looks good on paper, but what feels good inside the ropes with pairings, I think, is going to be important. But the other is that even of the experienced players that are on the Solheim Cup this year, because the United States has lost the last two, only three of the 12 players have ever been on a winning Solheim Cup team. So bringing some good vibes from the amateur days could be beneficial for Team USA as they move forward in this year's Solheim Cup.
Paige, this just shows how many pieces there are to this puzzle that Stacey Lewis is going to try to put together, and some of them might not even actually turn out to be parts of her puzzle next week. How do you think she's approaching, or will she approach, the job of captain? What's she going to lean on, and who's she going to lean on a week from now in Spain?
That's a great question, because there is some natural leadership in this team. You've got the players like Megan Kang, Lexi Thompson, Ali Ewing, Danielle Kang that have been there before. And I think that's going to be part of it. But I know she's going to be leaning on her assistant captains as well, and Angela Stanford, Morgan Pressel, Natalie Gulbis. But most of what I have heard that has gone on in Team USA is they're staring at the data. They've worked really closely with the KPMG folks to create good data for these players to figure out who's going to partner best with who. How are they going to fit these golf courses? Is it going to be foursomes or four ball for certain players? And I think that's a really good point that the both teams are going to have to factor in, is that Finca Courtesan is a very hilly golf course. It's going to be very challenging for a lot of players to be playing five matches. So there's not a lot of hiding players that may not be in good form. So finding out the correct formula for partnerships and four ball for some, I think, is going to be really important. And Stacey Lewis, I know, has not left any stone unturned.
It is a data-driven AI world we are living in. Much more from Paige in just a little bit. Let's take a look at the European team. Before we get to break, let's get a check on the Epson Tour. That's the road to the LPGA Tour. Because over the weekend, Natalia Kuseva took home the title at the Black Desert Resort Championship. And the win marked her first on the Epson Tour. And with the win, earned her $56,250. That's the biggest purse in Epson Tour history. And she has earned $74,197 this season and in her Epson Tour career. And she is the 12th first-time winner on the Epson Tour in 2023. The final round, 65, was her lowest round of the season. And the win moves her to number 12 in the race for the car. And coming up next, we are turning our focus back to the Solheim Cup. When we return, we are joined by six-time LET winner Maya Stark, who will make her Solheim Cup debut next week in España.
Welcome back to Golf Today. Let's take you back to 2021 as Katrina Matthews' European Solheim Cup team took down the U.S. at Inverness Club in Ohio. Victory marked Europe second in the United States. They won with a final score, 15-13. There's the legend, Laura Davies, with the trophy. Here are the results in the last six Solheim Cups, and you can see the ebb and flow here. A couple for Europe, a couple for the US, a couple for Europe again.
Let's focus in on one member of Team Europe, 23-year-old Maya Stark. The Swede will be making her Solheim Cup debut next week. Winner on the LPGA, broke through last August at the ISPS Hand at World Invitational for her first career victory on the LPGA Tour. But I tell you what, she's done a lot of winning since turning pro in 2021 after a couple of years at Oklahoma State. Six-time winner on the LET. And, of course, that 2022 ISPS Honda World Invitational was co-sanctioned between the LET and the LPGA. Got her LPGA membership and a member of the European Solheim Cup team. And Maya joins us right now. Maya, I read back in the spring you said match play is awful, but I love it. What did you mean?
Well, it's just nerve-wracking. And I think I said that during Las Vegas. And I think that the Solheim Cup, if Las Vegas was nerve-wracking, then the Solheim Cup is just going to be 10 times worse, at least 100 maybe. It's just so much pressure. And it's so easy to get caught up in what your opponent's doing all the time. But I think that's just the difficult parts of it, just to name one thing.
It's interesting that you're expecting it to be so much more nerve-wracking, Maya. I mean, you've won a lot, as Damon just pointed out, six wins in Europe. You've won on the LPGA Tour. Have you talked to anyone about what to expect in terms of those nerves when you first start out next week?
Not really. I've talked to Madeline a little bit about just what the week is like. But not really the nerves, because I'm just expecting it to be awful and that I'm going to be a mess. I mean, I've heard stories about, you know, rookies throwing up on the first tee, and I don't want to be one of those people, but I'm expecting it to be really just a lot of nerves the whole week.
Well, Maya, you are part of this Swedish renaissance in professional golf. I mean, you go back to Annika, to Pernilla, Anna Nordqvist, Caroline Hedvall, you and a bunch of teammates as well. What's it like having so much backup, so much inspiration that has led you to this moment?
It's so cool getting to first watch the people on TV that you've seen so close up, I guess, and then becoming friends with the people, and then actually being one of the people on the team is really cool. And it's nice that we're, you know, five Swedes this time, and it feels like the Swedes have a history of kind of having a lot of people on the team. Usually, I mean, especially around the 2000s, when, you know, Annika, Katrine Elsmark, like all of them were on the team. I think they had six people at that time that were on a 12-person team. So I think it's really cool to be back in, you know, the showing the world how good the Swedish players are.
You've certainly got a lot of familiarity with the rest of the team in the locker room, Maya, but I'm curious what you have with the venue in Finca Courtesan. It's a golf course that's unknown to most American fans, probably most of the American team. Do you have any familiarity with the golf course? Have you seen it? Do you know what kind of test it presents?
Yeah, we played it after the LET final last year. Suzanne and Caroline were down, so they gather eight potential players, and we got to do a little match there last year. So I know the whole course. Obviously, the setup is going to be a little bit different, but we got to see kind of what it was about, and it's really good. It's a really good course. It has everything you need. It has short par fours and it has short par fives, and it's just going to be a really cool setup, I think.
Maya, speaking of play, I understand you play musical instruments. What do you play and how does it help you during this stressful professional athletic life?
I play mostly just the drums and guitar. I think it's just something to keep me busy when I don't play golf and I don't really have anything to do. It's just something to get the time moving along a little bit faster because... Yeah, I'm just counting down the days until I get to go to the next competition.
And the days are counting down pretty fast for this Solheim Cup for you, Maya. Do you have any sense from Suzanne who you're likely to be partnered with? Is there anything you'd like to reveal on this show who you've been working up towards playing with?
I don't know if Suzanne's going to be mad at me if I say it again, but me and Lynn have played a lot of foursome matches, and I don't think we've ever lost. So... that would be one. And then she asked us our top three, who we want to play with. She did that months ago just to get a sense of who she might want to pick if you had to pick a wild card. So she knows two more, or three, I think, actually. So she knows. I don't think I'm allowed to tell, though.
Well, bring the clubs and maybe bring the drumsticks as well to Spain to pass the time. And best of luck next week, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Last week, he got the Ryder Cup captain's pick, and in a couple of weeks, he's going to attempt to justify it. In the meantime, Justin Thomas is still trying to find some form. We'll hear how that's going as he tees it up in Napa in the first event of the PGA Tour's fall. And a former FedEx Cup champion is joining us. It's a big week for Brant Snedeker and his family, but the event most on his mind is over on the Corn Ferry Tour. We'll explain that as Golf Today continues.
Golf Today.
Welcome back into Golf Today. Eamon Lynch alongside Damon Hack. And Damon, as seems to happen so often on this show these days, a little more news on the other side of the ropes.
News. This is a news channel and a news program. Sports and news, but a lot of news, as you know, the last couple of years in the game. And news today from our Rex Hoggard. Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut intensified his scrutiny of Saudi Arabia's public investment fund today by issuing a subpoena to one of the fund's U.S. subsidiaries for documents related to PIF's takeover of American Golf and other investments throughout the United States. And the aforementioned Rex Hoggard joins us now. Rex, what is the significance of this latest subpoena?
Well, Damon, there was a hearing actually today, the Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations, which Senator Blumenthal chairs, and it had to do essentially with the framework agreement between the PGA Tour and the Public Investment Fund. But there were no representatives either from the PGA Tour or the PIF. This goes back to the hearing in July. If you remember correctly, there were two representatives from the PGA Tour who testified at that hearing, but there was no one from the Public Investment Fund at the time. Their governor said there was some sort of scheduling conflict. Now, today's subpoena essentially tries to get the information that the senator has been trying to get all along, and it kind of goes to a central theme in this, I don't want to even call it an investigation, this back and forth between the Senate and the fund. It's all about sovereign and immunity, and essentially this applies to the idea that the fund, as well as its governor, do not have to submit to these types of subpoenas. This is certainly going to push the issue.
Rex, going back to the hearing that happened today, there were various people from various walks of life. that were testifying today before this subcommittee. What was your takeaway from what was offered to the Senate subcommittee in terms of testimony?
The hearing lasted a little under 2 hours, Eamon, and essentially it started with the idea of the framework agreement between the PGA Tour, between the PIF, and between LIV Golf. But it went well beyond that, as we've kind of seen. This hearing actually kind of focused more on exactly what the Public Investment Fund is trying to accomplish in the United States with all of these different investments. And as Senator Blumenthal pointed out, he's, quote, not letting this issue go. This goes back to very similar things he said in July at the first hearing. He also pointed out that the Public Investment Fund in 2018 had $2.5 billion in investments in the United States. That has since ballooned to $35 billion. And again, this all kind of stemmed with the framework agreement, but it's clear that's just a gateway for these senators. They want to look into really all of the Public Investment Fund's investments in the United States, as well as the kingdom's motivations.
Rex Hager reporting. Check it out on golfchannel.com. And Eamon, I want to ask you about this subpoena, because part of this story, even before the lawsuit was put to bed, was the question of discovery, of information being made public. Now you have the United States Senate subpoenaing the PIF. What do you think the ultimate play is going to be? Is the PIF going to submit to this request?
I don't think there's any chance the PIF submits to this request. I mean, this was, in the minds of a lot of people, the reason why the litigation ended, the idea that there would be scrutiny of Saudi Arabian investments in the United States that are both known and stealth investments. And that kind of scrutiny is unwelcome because it might reveal how many of those investments are explicitly political in nature versus merely commercial. So Yasser Al-Rumayyan, the governor of the Public Investment Fund, who has not personally been subpoenaed here, he's very unlikely to actually accede to this request. His lawyers will probably move to quash it. But I did think it was interesting that the subpoena was issued to a wholly owned subsidiary that the Saudis operate in the United States, which might be a way of trying to do an end run around the normal defense that the Saudis are going to mount in this case, which is sovereign immunity, which a judge in the previous case in the litigation with the PGA Tour has pointed out it's a nonsense defense, that there is a commercial exception to it. If you do business in the United States, you are subject to the laws and oversight in the United States, and that includes the Senate committee.
As the USSA LLC. Does that tell you that this framework agreement, because of all of the potential snags, whether they be political, whether they be just the framework agreement itself, that we could still be very, very far away from having something concrete and workable between the PIF, the PGA Tour, and the DP World Tour?
There are so many moving parts in this that are both political, internal, external. I do think they're quite a way away from any kind of definitive deal between these parties. And I wouldn't be surprised if that December 31st deadline is extended by the parties, which the framework agreement does give them the option to do. It seems it's an awful lot of work to get done in the next couple of months. And the idea of ignoring congressional subpoenas is probably not going to win them many friends on the Hill. It's unclear to what extent this committee can influence this deal. I doubt very much it can derail it in any manner, but it could certainly complicate things. And it's not something the PGA Tour is going to want to have to deal with, of going into business with people who are actively evading subpoenas from the United States Congress.
This framework agreement was announced in darkness. We learned about it. You know, it was a surprise to so many of us.
It's not getting much brighter since, is it?
It hasn't. And I wonder, will the ultimate agreement come from darkness as well? Or do you think there will be concrete steps, a trail that we'll be able to follow? Okay, this box is checked, this agreement happens, and we're closer and closer. Or will this come out of thin air, just as the original framework agreement did?
I would lean more towards the latter than the former. I think at this point, it's a strategy not to give people things to object to. And that includes membership of the PGA Tour, that there are players who simply don't want this or think that there's a better alternative out there and aren't happy with the way things are being run. The more information you give people in advance, the more opportunity they have to rally against it and to actually kind of counter with different proposals, different strategies. And I don't see that being a strategy that any of these parties want to take. I think they will try to present a fait accompli and see where it takes them.
All of the while, the follow this story, you can go to golfchannel.com. Rex Hager's great reporting, as well as Eamon Lynch's great reporting in Golf Week magazine.
Well, the fall portion of the PGA Tour schedule kicks off Thursday with the Fortinet Championship in Napa. You can catch live first round coverage at 6 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Golf Channel. And here is the fall schedule for the PGA Tour. 7 events starting this week in Napa and ending Sea Island, Georgia with the RSM Classic in November. And an explanation of what is at stake here. People who finished 1 through 50 in the prior season's FedEx Cup, they're locked in place. Players 51st and beyond will carry their FedEx Cup points from the regular season and the first playoff event. Top 50 players through the Tour Championship have secured their position. They're not a factor here, can't receive any more points even if they do compete. The top 125 will be finalised at the end of those 7 events, and those players will be exempt into the 2024 full field events, including the Players' Championship, and winning still matters out here. The top 10 players on the FedEx Cup points list after the fall, not yet eligible for signature events, will get into the 2 signature events following the Century, which of course is the Genesis, Damon, and the AT&T Pebble Beach. The winners still make their way into the Masters and obviously the Players' Championship. There is actually more at stake here than you could argue than there was last year when they were regular FedEx Cup season in a wraparound season. Do you think this is a positive move for the Tour, or is that a wait and see?
I think it's a great question. I think it's a positive move. I like the fact that these 7 tournaments will determine and finalize the ultimate 125, you know, the 500 cup point, the FedEx Cup points for the winner, the 2-year exemption, entry to the Century, entry into the Players, entry into the major championships that allow PGA Tour winners to go into said major championships. I love the 10 players not otherwise eligible having a chance to get into those designated events. It just adds more meat to the fall.
Does it give it an identity in your mind that it perhaps didn't have?
Yeah, that's what's yet to be seen. Let's see who plays well. Let's see what stories emerge. So I'm going to say, yes, it's an improvement, more defined, more meat on the bone. But what it ultimately becomes, I think, will be determined by the players who win. What are the stories? Who will be the players that win in the fall that ultimately go on to win the Players or win major championships or become that top 10, top 15, top 20 player? It's an opportunity. The players want opportunity. This is an opportunity. It's packaged in a different way than we used to see it, but I do think it's an affirmative step.
Players used to want opportunity. Now they want guarantees. Yes. I do think this is the most fluid part of the schedule. It has been for a number of years. I think on the whole, this is generally a positive. I can't wait to see Q School in December. That's, you know, you talk to veterans and they're still traumatized by going to Q School 3 decades ago.
For sure.
Kind of stays with these guys. It's going to be interesting to see what happens this point in the year, 2 years from now, 4 years from now, because whatever comes out of the framework agreement, either in terms of is there suddenly a team component to professional golf at the elite level? Is there the strategic alliance with the DP World Tour? What does that look like? Do those players, as Guy Kinnings mentioned on our show earlier today, do they start to appear more at these flagship and bigger Rolex Series events in Europe and around the world leading up to Dubai in the second half of the year? So it's very much a fluid part of the calendar, and it's going to be really interesting to see not just how this plays out this year and even into next year, but how it actually looks a couple of years down the road.
It's a great point. In the history of the FedEx Cup playoffs even, it's been very fluid even with the FedEx Cup because there's been no certainty. The point system has changed. We've gone from a flat start to a starting strokes system, and now you throw in the uncertainty with this framework agreement. I think this is temporary. I like the move. I like the name, the alliteration, FedEx Cup Fall. I mean, I like that as well. But you're right. There's still so many unknowns in terms of what the ultimate this will look like with team aspects or opposite field events or co-sanctioned events like the Genesis Scottish Open, for example.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see how many of the top stars actually show up to compete. A lot of the guys don't want to sit at home for 2, 3, 4 months, which will be the case if they're not the kind of players who are going to go play in Europe or they're not going to end up playing team events. So you will see some top players show up. We're seeing them this week in Napa as well. It's going to be interesting to see the frequency with which they show up there because let's not forget, they also dictated aspects of this fall series, even if they're not in it because they got tired of showing up to play at Century or at Riviera and finding out that they were hundreds of FedEx Cup points behind guys who had actually committed to play in the fall. So they are dictating the shape of this. It's a key question to see how much of a part they're actually going to play in it.
Let's dig into this FedEx Cup fall. Welcome in Kira K. Dixon from Silverado Resort and Spa. Great to see you, Kira K. Speaking of great alliteration, what are the players saying about the fall?
Yeah, Damon, of course, the players are really excited about the fall. One of those players that's in the field this week is Justin Thomas. He's coming off of a scouting trip with the Ryder Cup team in Rome. He hasn't teed it up here in Napa since 2020 when he finished top five. I asked him about his motivation to compete here this week and also to describe his current coaching relationship with his father, Mike Thomas, and parting ways with longtime putting coach John Graham.
Yeah, I first off, I love this tournament. I really, really like this golf course. It just hasn't necessarily fit schedule-wise in the past couple years, and due to my season ending a little earlier than I would have liked last year, I needed and wanted to play something, whether I was on the Ryder Cup or not. I think a lot of us golfers say we won an off season, and then we have a month off, and we get a little stir crazy, and this is a good opportunity for me to come play. So I'm excited to be here, and to play a good tournament and a great golf course.
Speaking of that season ending early, I know that you've been dealing with some struggles that maybe you haven't been dealing with in the past. There's been some conversation around the exact approach that you're taking to your game right now, who you're working with. I know you parted ways with John Graham, your longtime putting coach. Can you explain exactly what the status is with working with your dad, not working with your dad, and things of that nature?
Yeah. Some things definitely got taken out of context. But, John and I had a great run and also a great conversation in terms of how it all ended. It just was, it's basically like I told him, at some point he can't go out there and make the putts for me. You know, I felt like we were doing everything we needed to. I just needed to get a little bit better at holing putts. And that's only something I can do myself. And in terms of with my dad, no, everything is great. It's just more me taking accountability. My best couple years on tour, or when he was still, he was still working in Louisville, he was still head pro, he'd come to the majors, maybe a handful of tournaments here and there, but I've always been really, really good at adjusting and adapting to what I'm either feeling or seeing and able to make those changes mid-round, and I feel like I've kind of lost that. I think I've had a great team around me that is willing to be there all the time, but for me, I think it's best that I take a little bit of ownership and I kind of figure some stuff out myself. And so it's more of just, hopefully everything's going great and I'm able to just kind of continue to do what I'm doing, but I'll always have them. And in the sense of, just like I was growing up, I send him a video. I have a pretty good idea what I see before he sees it. We have a very similar eye, and just about going out and playing golf and not golf swing and just play and shoot the best I can.
Was there any sort of inflection point that led you to these realizations of taking more ownership?
Yeah, we kind of had it a couple times last year in the middle of the year. It was kind of like, I'd say late spring. I just noticed, I became way too dependent on them in the sense of, something would happen. I'd turn around like, what is it? And it's like, I know what's going on here. And I need to know and figure it out myself. And like I said, that's something I've really taken pride in myself is, I've won golf tournaments in the past without my best stuff, but that's because I've been able to figure it out. And I just felt like I lost that a little bit because of the amount of, I don't want to say obviously a lot of trust, but the amount that I depended on everybody that was there all the time. So it just was, those last 2 weeks in the season, I think were big for me, and Wyndham especially was, I had some times and some days where things didn't feel great, whether it was putting or on the range, and I'd take some video and I just figure it out. And that's what I did as a kid. It's what I did in college and what I feel like has gotten me to where I am. So I need to find that happy medium again, and I feel like I'm on that right track.
Well, as I mentioned, Justin Thomas is arriving in Napa after that quick scouting trip to Rome and a stop off in New York City. So he told me that he's probably going to be taking it easy off the course this week in Napa, perhaps not taking advantage of the things that you, Damon, love so much here in the Napa Valley. But somebody else that's going to be trying to take it easy off the course this week as well is Max Homa, who was on that scouting trip as well. The defending champion spoke with me earlier about walking up to the 72nd hole at last year's tournament, thinking that this was in Danny Willett's hand. Well, that all flipped on the 18th green when Max Homa walked away as the champion.
very crazy. I was with Lacey. She, all of a sudden, I get a tap on the back, and she's on the green. And I looked at her, and I thought to say, get off the green. Like, you know, we have to go to a playoff or something. It all happened so quickly, but obviously very fortunate. But it was fun. It's one of those things I don't think I'll ever fully process. But it was fun. You know, Joe had told me before I hit the chip, he said, just make him win, make him earn it, make him beat us. And fortunately, I, you know, got lucky, knocked it in, and then chaos ensued. But I was very happy to come out on the right side of that one.
So a win here used to mean setting up your season and getting a head start with the FedEx Cup points. Now a win here would mean something kind of different in the FedEx Cup fall. Can you kind of put into context what a win here now means?
Yeah, obviously there's a lot of guys here. They're going to first off try and finish in the 125. People are trying to get into the signature, the first two signature events. So it's got a different dynamic. For myself, I can't improve my position, but I can go shake Steve Sugar's hand in 2 weeks and let him know that we were the last two people to win three in a row. So that's kind of my goal. Yeah, so it's a bit different, but I do think it's this fall now, in my opinion, gets more exciting. I think there's a lot more. It's easier to understand what a win does. It's just a continuation of last season. So a lot of people here are obviously looking to confirm that they will have starts next year and then hopefully get to play in the first couple signature events. So I think it's quite exciting.
And speaking of goals, one of them for you for a very long time has been to be on the Ryder Cup team. Of course, you've had your experience at the President's Cup. You just got back from a scouting trip in Rome. What are your takeaways from getting to be with most of the team at Marco Simone?
It was absolutely awesome. I found it so fun at the President's Cup just to be around the best Americans and just get to pick their brain and just be around them and see what they do. And, you know, we laughed more than I can remember laughing at a golf, you know, a couple golf days, these last couple in Rome. I feel like the team is really tight knit. I feel like everybody really enjoyed being around each other. I feel like everyone was so excited, and I don't know, I just really love this team. I feel like everybody was kind of on the same page. The golf course is going to be a bear to walk, but other than that, it's going to be one of the, hopefully, the coolest week, you know, we ever had. Hopefully knock that, get the monkey off our back and stop this 30-year drought we've had over there. So, but it was a great start. It was cool that we got to go over there and kind of see what we're going to get into.
Well, you heard Max mention that FedEx Cup fall. That has very much changed the identity of the event here in Napa. This, the Fortinet Championship used to really serve as a season opener. All of the recent Korn Ferry Tour grads who'd just gotten their cards on the PGA Tour would be here, and it was kind of like a first day of school vibes. It gave people the opportunity to get a head start on the FedEx Cup points going into that following season. Now, of course, that has very much changed. Players here will be looking to improve their status heading into the 2024 season, hoping to get into those signature events. So a lot on the line here in Napa.
Welcome back to Golf Today. A reminder that the fall portion of the PGA Tour schedule gets underway this Thursday in Napa. You can catch live first-round coverage of the Fortinet Championship right here on Golf Channel at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And while all 12 members of the European Ryder Cup team are competing, only two of the U.S. team are competing on this side of the pond. That's Max Homa, going for three titles in a row, and Justin Thomas, who is searching for some form. And yesterday, the U.S. captain, Zach Johnson, and his assistant, Stuart Sink, met the media for more on what they had to say. We're going to head back out to Napa and say hello again to Kira K. Dixon.
Well, Eamon, Zach Johnson has spent the last 2 years planning, thinking about, plotting what this U.S. Ryder Cup team is going to look like. And last week in Rome, he got to finally see almost a complete picture as most of the team made it out to a scouting trip at Marco Simone. Now, there is some business to attend to prior to the team going back out to Italy, and that's competing for Zach Johnson and Stuart Sink and a few others like Max Homa and Justin Thomas here at the Fortinet Championship. Now, Zach and Stuart sat down with the media yesterday and spoke about the benefits of some pre-Ryder Cup competition, especially for the likes of Max and Justin.
Cool. Sure.
What does that feel like?
Well, I think the beauty of having a month off from the Tour Championship to the actual Cup does give us the luxury and freedom to, you know, come here and compete. I mean, Max and JT, I don't really want to speak on behalf of them, but if they don't play well, they may not play. That's the bottom line. I'm kidding.
There was a little hesitation there. Did you see that? They took it seriously.
No. But, I mean, you know, Max is obviously defending. Max, two times over? Am I fair? Is that right? So that's pretty impressive. And it doesn't surprise me that he wants to try to defend his championship. That's awesome. JT's obviously had a little bit more time off, so it's great that he wants to get in the back in that environment of competing and, you know, that sort of thing. I mean, you know, hopefully they both play great at the same time. Stuart and I were just talking about it before we sat down. We're on a 9-hour time change right now, and so it's, you know, everything's kind of a little trying.
Zach, question about the Ryder Cup. Have you started, I'm sure you have, thinking about the pairings, and are you just kind of going back and forth each night, jotting down mock pairings and things like that?
Stuart?
I think he's got a secret camera inside your room.
Or your room.
Or my room.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'd be lying to you if I said we haven't started talking about that, discussing that, kind of piecing things together. But it's not like we have it in set in stone yet. You know, it's one of those areas that's really, really difficult, but it's also really, really exciting and fun to kind of start to see how this team can take shape. At this point in this captainship, the worst part of my job is sitting guys. You know, I mean, I'd like to take 25 guys over there to play. I can't do that. And I'd like for all the guys to play every session. Can't do that either. So, but that's the way it is, and everybody knows that. So, yeah, I mean, we're starting to get into some possible pairings to see what's best for that golf course and what's best for our team.
Yeah, I think the golf course is going to solve some of that problem because it's so hilly, and the temperature could be pretty hot too, that I think guys are going to be happy to probably rest. There's not going to be a lot of disappointment for not playing five.
Well,
I wouldn't think so.
No, I mean, it's brutal walk. And then, like you said, compounding that with heat.
Yeah, it's probably the most
– caddies, too.
The caddies, too. The most demanding physically of any cup course I've ever seen that I've been a part of.
No question. Yeah. In my time, for sure.
I want to address one thing on your question, though, too. I think it's inevitable that whatever Max and JT do this week will be overstated, to the good or to the bad.
That's well said.
It will be. And I hope they both win. I don't think that's possible, but I hope they both win. It'd be great for their confidence.
Amazing.
For their confidence alone. It won't have anything to do with Zach's decisions.
And we tie for third.
Yeah. It won't have anything to do with our
decision making. We're speaking obvious here. You guys knew that. Yeah.
But I just think it's for us internally, it'll probably be we hope that they have confidence coming out of this week, and that'd be a great thing. As far as how to balance the schedule here, well, Napa's pretty known for wine, and I will be sampling some of the Napa varieties so I can compare it to some of the Italian varieties when we get over there. So that's part of my my strategy this week, to keep my mind compartmentalized. Yeah.
But I told him he had to play here for that reason alone.
Well, Captain Zach Johnson and Assistant Captain Stuart Sink have not had some competition for themselves in professional golf in about 2 to 3 weeks, so that they were saying that after that trip to Rome, their competitive juices were flowing. They were very fired up to get in the field here at the Fortinet Championship. And for Zach Johnson, he mentioned that getting to get back into his tournament routines and focus on himself and some competition actually allows him to decompress from some of the pressures that come with being the Ryder Cup captain, and what better place to decompress than the Napa Valley?
No doubt, Kieran. Glad to hear Stuart Sink gonna have some fermented grape juice both in Napa and in Italy. Now, Brad Snedeker has won 9 times on the PGA Tour, but the work he's doing off the golf course is having a big impact on children across the country. This week's Korn Ferry Tour event benefits the Snedeker Foundation, and Brant joins us next to talk about the importance of this week. Hey, we're back on golf today. Flashback to 2012. Brant Snedeker fired a final round 68 at Eastlake to win the Tour Championship and the FedEx Cup. 3-shot win carried with it a $10 million bonus. And Brant also has some street cred when it comes to the Ryder Cup, represented the U.S. twice. First 2012, Medina. That was a tough one for the U.S. side, but then was a part of the winning side in 2016. Kick save and a beauty.
And Brandt's ninth and most recent victory on the PGA Tour came the 2018 Wyndham Championship. He started that week as dramatically as he finished it. He shot an opening round 59 at Sedgefield Country Club and finished with a final round 65 to win by three. And Brandt Snedeker joins us now. Brandt, thanks for joining us. On the Corn Ferry Tour this week, Simmons Bank Open, it's down in your hometown of Nashville. It's benefiting the Snedeker Foundation, which you started with your wife, Mandy. Can you explain to us off the top what the work is that the foundation is engaged in?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. You know, the biggest thing I when I won the FedEx Cup in 2012 was finding a way to give back. You know, I've been so blessed in my life to be able to just play golf for a living and not have a real job. So how can we give back to our local community? And so we kind of started that mission into 2012, and it's kind of morphed into this, our foundation that as it presently is today, where we're trying to find ways to help kids, underprivileged kids, underserved kids in the Middle Tennessee area. It's been a great kind of challenge and a great kind of road for us to travel these last 10 years. And we've kind of honed what we've done to helping after school programs, helping scholarship programs. I'm really involved in the SNEDS Tour, which is our junior golf tour here in the state of Tennessee, where we have 2,000 kids playing over 200 events throughout the course of spring, summer, and fall, and trying to make sure golf's affordable, accessible for everybody who walks in the door in the state of Tennessee. So all these different kind of avenues we've kind of developed over the last 10 years to kind of really, A, find ways to give back to our home state and to our Middle Tennessee area, and B, to find a way to enrich kids' lives here who are in need of a help, in need of a boost, and we've had a lot of fun doing it in the process.
This is the seventh playing, Brandt. How has it evolved? How much has it matched what you originally wanted it to be?
Yeah, it's kind of exceeded our expectations, to be honest with you. You know, having a partner like Simmons Bank has really made this tournament, taken this tournament to another level. You know, we are now a second playoff event here on the Corn Ferry Tour. We were the tournament of the year last year on the Corn Ferry Tour. So I'm so proud of the work these guys have done. Our tournament director does a great job. And Simmons Bank has really kind of pushed us to make sure that we up the level of the play here. So we're at the Grove here this week in Franklin, Tennessee. It's a great venue. The golf course is phenomenal. The guys are excited. We have a great look of weather for the week, and we're looking forward to crowning a great champion by the end of play on Sunday.
You've had a rough couple of years, Brandt. You'd lost both of your parents in quick succession. You had a long injury layoff. You had a major surgery. Do you feel as though you're out from under that now and moving forward, or are you still kind of working your way through those last couple of years?
Yeah, I sure hope I am. Yeah, it's been a rough go. Getting older is not as easy as everybody says it's going to be. So my body's kind of broken down on me a little bit. Had some personal struggles with losing both my parents. But, you know, I feel like the last year has been really good in the fact that I've kind of had almost a year off, and not many people get to experience that. So I'm kind of viewed as a positive of having kind of a midlife sabbatical where I've gotten away from the game. I realize, A, how much I love it, B, how passionate I am still about it, and C, still how much I think I have to give the world of golf, and more importantly, to win more tournaments. So I'm really excited about it. I can't wait to see what this next year holds for me. I've been practicing a lot, playing a lot, getting my body back to where it feels like it's right again, and trying to kind of get back to the form I know I can play at. You know, getting older is never easy, but it's kind of redoubled my efforts to kind of work the way I did when I was first on tour trying to get my card. And so I'm excited about what the fruits of all those labors can be.
Brandt, around the country, we're seeing a revitalization of neighborhoods, revitalization of golf courses. You grew up playing a golf course called Shelby in Nashville. I read that you've played thousands of rounds of golf there. What's going on at Shelby in your old neck of the woods?
Yeah, it's really cool. You know, the city has stepped up. The Tennessee Golf Foundation, which is also a beneficiary here this week, it's really helped us through our foundation, is going to do a $2 million renovation of Shelby. Shelby's was founded in 1924. It's 100-year anniversary next year. Nine of the holes were designed by Donald Ross. It's a mile from a metro city center. And it's just kind of fallen in a state of disrepair. It just needs some loving. It needs a little capital income. And the city's been gracious enough to kind of grant us a couple million dollars to go in and redo it. The TGF's going to do a great job. We have a guy named Bruce Heppner, a great architect, coming in to kind of help us redo the tees and greens and kind of really spruce up what could be a really cool course close to downtown. It's not a long golf course, but it's a lot of fun, and it's right in the middle of the city. So I can't wait to see what they're going to do with it. Being over there on Monday for the announcement was really cool. You know, a lot of great memories of my dad, my brother out there, us playing together. And at the end of the day, that's what being a game of golf is about, right? Being out there and spending time with people you care about. Great memories. And so that was a really cool thing the city of Nashville did to step up and really kind of reinvest in something that can be so special to the town, which is a public golf course.
Brand, it doesn't sound like you've had a year off at all based on the number of projects you have going on right now, not least of which is being the informal host of the tournament this week. But you said the fire hasn't gone anywhere. You really want to get that 10th win and more beyond that. What does your competitive schedule look like now as we start the fall series on the PGA Tour?
Yeah, it's going to be pretty heavy. I'm going to try to play at least four or five events this fall, try to get the rust knocked off from what was a seven-month, eight-month layoff, and really start January on a high note. I feel like I'm refreshed. I'm ready to go. I'm excited about kind of being out there and being able to play a full schedule. So, I realize in this year off, I'm way too young to retire. I'm unemployable. And I really love what I do for a living. So I want to get back at playing great golf again and show my kids I still have a job. I still know what I'm doing. And kind of show some of these young kids on tour that all of us old guys out there still have a thing or two to teach them.
Brant, as a two-time member of the U.S. Ryder Cup team, what will it be like for you to watch in a couple of weeks' time? Difficult? Relaxing? How will you take being, watching from at home as opposed to being a part of the team and wearing the red, white, and blue?
Yeah, it won't be difficult at all, and it certainly won't be relaxing. I got a lot of great friends on that team that I want to see do well. Zach's a dear friend. A lot of guys I compete with and play with that I want to see play great. You know, I think it's going to be a very difficult Ryder Cup, obviously being on foreign soil. I think the European team is a lot stronger than people are giving it credit for. And I think our team, even though there was a lot of controversy around the picks and who was left off and who wasn't on the team, we still got 12 great players going over there playing for United States of America. They're going to be ready to go. So it's going to be a close Ryder Cup, in my opinion. I don't see anybody blowing one team out or the other. I got to go with my U.S. squad to pull it out. But I think that's strictly from experience. I think we have more experience on the side on our team. And I think guys are really motivated to win one overseas. You know, that has not happened in a long time. I think it means the world to them to go over there with a kind of a chip on their shoulder, knowing that it's going to be them having to keep the crowds and the quiet as possible. I think our guys can thrive on that and hopefully pull out a win and bring the cup back home.
Lots to look forward to in a couple weeks' time, but a lot to look forward to for you this week at the Grove, Brant. Great catching up with you. Thanks so much for the time.
Thanks for having me, guys. And Damon, great swing. I saw you posted on Twitter. Way to go.
Hey, my man, I appreciate it. Game recognizes game. What can I say? Brant Snedeker has made my week.
I promise I'm not searching for one of my drives over here in the trees. I promise that's what happened right now.